Blog Talk Radio.
Boys and girls, children of all ages, apologies for some of the issues there with the opening, but Blog Talk's having a couple of minor issues that they're addressing, so we might get a few hiccups here and there, but this is live, and that happens sometimes when you have live stuff. This is the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Robert Winfrey, and thank you all so very much for tuning in. On the show tonight, pretty much just previewing UFC Fight Night 87, heavyweights, yay. Yeah, my enthusiasm for those top two fights knows no bounds, apparently. Also, real briefly, Conor McGregor not getting UFC 200. UFC announced the main card for that. Jeff and I will place bets on which fight falls out. Because. And any other major news articles that have come up in the last week, I think that's most of it. If you would like to call in and talk about any of that or anything else pertaining to the world of mixed martial arts, because we, you know, are more than happy to talk about anything we feel reasonably qualified to discuss, the call-in number is 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. If you would like to call in using Skype, you must be on the Blog Talk Radio player page. There is a Skype icon. It's off-center to the right at the top of the player. Click on that. There's going to be three or four boxes of dialogue you'll have to click through, but go ahead and go through those. It will bring you up in my switchboard, and I will get you on the air. I think that's all of the intro for this time around. Here with me, as always, ladies and gentlemen, 411 Mania's jack of all trades, because he's in just about every zone. And my regular partner in crime for this show, Jeff Harris, is with us again. Jeff, how you doing this evening?
Like Conor McGregor, I'm ready to run this shit back. Let's do it.
Alrighty. This Sunday morning, another early morning card for me. Yay, thank you for that, UFC. UFC Fight Night 87, the UFC's debut in the Netherlands. Ought to be a... You know, I mean, my general lack of enthusiasm for heavyweight fights aside, this is a really solid card. I was surprised when I looked at it. There's at least one really good fight on the Fight Pass prelims. The rest of it's on Fox Sports 1, but there's a couple of good fights on the prelims. There's a few really good fights on the main card. This is a solid event that they're bringing here, especially considering it's an early morning card on a Sunday and, an overseas show. They put some pretty serious effort into this thing. I was surprised. But in the main event, we have Dutch-born kickboxing legend. Legend might be a bit steep, but... And, you know, former Strikeforce heavyweight champion, former K-1 Grand Prix champion, Alistair Overeem. He really wanted to be on this card again. He was born in the Netherlands. He was raised in England, if memory serves, but, you know, born Dutch. He really wanted to be a part of this card, so I'm glad he gets to. It's always nice to see fighters get something, especially when they want to when they want something like this, you know, to be on a part of, to be on a card that they feel is is, you know, important, or, you know, for whatever reason. He wanted this one. He's got it. He's going to be taking on a former heavyweight champion, Andrei Arlovsky. Arlovsky coming off of that first round knockout loss to current title challenger, Stipe Miocic. Incidentally, don't sleep on Miocic when he gets that title shot. Dude's legitimate. But this is a fight that, you know, it's a heavyweight fight. These two guys are both a tad chinny for heavyweight. I mean, you know, this is a division where everybody kind of slings with power. And you better have a head made out of, you know, concrete, basically. And neither of these guys do. Neither of them is glass-jawed, necessarily. Either one of them lands clean, this one could be over in a hurry. Neither of them has, you know, groundbreaking recuperative abilities. They're both strikers, which leads me to believe Andrei Arlovsky will try wrestling in this match. I say that only quasi-facetiously. If he's unsure in the striking, he's not afraid to try and wrestle you. That's what he did to Anthony Johnson frequently for a lot of that fight, if memory serves. Ugh, terrible fight, but point was he did it. I'm a little bit torn here because either one of these guys could go to sleep in a hurry in this fight. Overeem's on a pretty good winning streak at the moment. He is on 3, I think. Yeah, he's on a 3-fight winning streak. Knocked out Stefan Struve, decisioned Roy Nelson, then TKO Junior Dos Santos. Pretty good turnaround for Overeem, all things considered. You know, he went on that, you know, 2-fight losing streak, beat Frank Mir, then lost to Ben Rothwell. He was in a rough spot for a while there. He's in a pretty good spot now. A win here puts him in title contention easily. It would be 4 in a row, and, you know, this isn't lightweight where 4 in a row is a big deal, but if he stops Junior Dos Santos and Andrei Arlovsky in back-to-back fights, he's probably in the discussion for a title shot sooner rather than later, and may have had one written into his contract. Now, since he's got a new one going into this fight, you never know what you can get written into those things. As for Arlovsky, again, coming off of that loss to Stipe Miocic, but he had a really good run going before that, a really impressive winning streak. I'm going to lean towards Alistair Overeem here. I think Arlovsky has a tendency to either brawl with his opponents or get sucked into them very easily, try to get his opponents to do that. And if you don't brawl with him, his win rate goes down a little bit. He really kind of likes a little bit of that brawling, where he can be a more technical brawler than his opponent. And Alistair Overeem does not brawl. It's against his nature. It's against his best interest. He just doesn't do it. I think he'll be able to be patient, use leg kicks, body kicks, circle, get Arlovsky sloppy, and then catch him with a, you know, good power punch and put him away, probably in the second. Mostly I'm just praying this fight doesn't go 5 rounds, because yeesh. All right, Jeff, heavyweights, what do you got?
I'm going with Andrei Arlovsky here. I mean, it's not that I don't think Andrei Arlovsky is incapable of winning this fight. I think he can. Overeem does have some noticeable holes in his game that I think Arlovsky could exploit. For one thing, his cardio. This is a 5-round fight that could possibly favor Arlovsky. The other thing is Arlovsky doesn't throw straight punches, and he never has. He kind of he always throws curves, and he always puts a lot of power behind him. And that could be something if Arlovsky is technical. And he tries to maybe fight smart and try to outpace Overeem, that's a way I can see Arlovsky winning. Take Overeem into the deep waters, and that's where he starts to have trouble. like in the rematch with Verdum, like in the fight with Bigfoot. However, Arlovski he's not been very technical as of late, if you've seen his recent fights. Even that time he beat Travis Brown, he still almost got knocked out before he was ultimately able to finish the fight. And his chin is just – the reason I don't have much faith in Arlovski winning is because his chin is not the greatest, and it hasn't been great for a long time. He's been knocked out quite a few times, and that's just why I don't feel great about picking him for this fight. But we'll see. I'm leaning toward Overeem, but if Arlovski is prepared and his cardio is on point and he tries to not get into a brawl with Overeem in the first couple rounds, I think he could come out of this the winner.
Jeff, because you and I are both kind of the same mind there, this is a really tough one to call. Either guy could win. Does that add to the intrigue for you for this fight, or is it just kind of neither here nor there?
A decent heavyweight matchup. Overeem has certainly come back from the depths his UFC career sank to a little while ago. He's still a far cry from the exciting contender he was when he first came into the UFC and beat up Brock Lesnar and before the failed drug test. He's still a far cry from being that guy and being the potential superstar he could have been at that point, but he still has enough intrigue where he's come back from that bad slump. And, I mean, so has Arlovski, for that matter. I mean, Arlovski has earned his spot to be in the UFC again, even though he's coming off that big knockout loss to Stipe Miocic. So I think there's enough intrigue for this fight. I think as an overseas card, it's a good heavyweight main event.
All right, the co-main event is also in the heavyweight division. Can't you just feel my enthusiasm radiating off of me?
I can feel Mark Radulescu's.
Yeah, I think everyone, you know, in a 5-state radius can feel his. They're not quite sure what's causing it necessarily, but they can feel it.
Heavyweight, man.
This fight, at least, I am confident. Not overly confident, but confident this fight's not really going anywhere past the first 5 minutes. Antonio Bigfoot Silva is fighting Stefan Struve. Struve, another, you know, native Dutchman, getting to fight within the UFC in his home country again. So, you know, there's a few of those guys on this card. But Antonio Silva, minus, you know, various hormones and steroids, is just not quite the same fighter. He also took that fight with Mark Hunt. That took something out of him in a pretty big way. I mean, I'm amazed Mark Hunt rebounded physically as well as he did from that, because those two beat the crap out of each other for 5 rounds. But he is 1-4-1 in his last 6 fights. His only win is over Soa Pelele, and much as I love Soa Pelele and his karaoke, a top 15 heavyweight at this point in his career, he is not.
Stefan Struve isn't doing much better as of late. His one
Struve
win
isn't.
Is over.
That's very true. Struve is also in a bit of a slump.
I mean, his last win was over the corpse of Minotauro Nogueira at UFC 190 last August.
Yeah, and
Then he got beat by Jared Rosholt.
He got beat by Jared Rosholt, who is no longer with the company.
Yeah, who's not even in the UFC. So, I mean, the heavyweight division is in such a state where it's just it's not top heavy, and there's not a lot of guys, you know, at the mid-level of heavyweight, where I could see both, whoever loses this could still stay on the UFC roster, but realistically, either one of these guys with a loss probably should be cut, just with the way they've been fighting as of late.
Yeah, I'd certainly agree with that.
Look, say what you want about Jared Rosenthal, but the man had a winning record in the UFC, and before that, and he got cut with one loss coming off a winning streak. So if you're going to do that, I think, you know, the loser of this fight, who would be 0-2, but, you know, still not a good record lately, I think you should probably give him the pink slip.
I'd agree.
Because
I mean,
they have not been performing at all.
Yeah, I was not. I'm not shedding any tears over Rochalt's departure because the man was in some abysmal fights. That being said, he only had two losses in the UFC and four or five wins, if memory serves. I'm not looking at his record, but off the top of my head, I want to say four or five. It's a very good record. And I know they put a premium on, you know, performance and, you know, keeping fans around, so I understand him being cut, but if you're going to cut a guy who's winning off of one loss, you know, these two guys, somebody's going away. This is actually a rematch. No, sorry. Wrong fight. Not a rematch. I just remembered that Struve got knocked out by Overeem, and we were just talking about Overeem, so my apologies. Not a rematch. Struve only, he's 1-3 in his last four. He was finished by Mark Hunt and Alistair Overeem. Got a crappy decision against Nogueira. Not a bad decision in the sense that I thought Nogueira won, but that was a crappy fight. And is coming off of a terrible decision when he lost to Jared Rosenthal. Awful fight as well. Just awful fight. These two are fighting likely for their jobs, not just relevancy in a, you know, thin division. I feel okay picking Stefan Struve here. Struve has a little bit more of a chin than Bigfoot does at this point. Struve is also... Bigfoot's best path to success actually lies in taking this to the ground. Struve has a good ground game, but off of his back, he is terrible at controlling posture. He's content to utilize his guard to try and throw up triangles or arm bars or sweeps. And Bigfoot Silva, heavy enough on top, a high enough level grappler, he should avoid most of those. But Struve will just let him get top position, posture up, and hit him. Struve's defense off of his back is pretty poor. This has been to this point. I mean, if he's been working on it and he shows improvement, fair enough. But look back at some of his previous fights, you know, against Mark Hunt, against Alistair Overeem, who finished him on the ground with strikes. It's a historic weakness for him. Is if he's on his back, he doesn't do a great job of controlling his opponents. On the feet, you know, I give a little bit of an edge to Struve. Both these guys hit hard, but again, Bigfoot's chin is just kind of shot at this point. And I think Struve's going to tag him and put him away. Again, I really hope in the first. I really do, because I don't want to see these two guys go three rounds. But if Struve gets sloppy, as he has in the past, he could get, you know, he could get caught by Bigfoot. And Struve has a good chin, at least relative to Bigfoot. But if he gets clobbered, Silva's a finisher. If he I can't remember too many times where he has hurt someone and just let them off the hook. I'm going with Struve, but I see ways Bigfoot could win this fight. Jeff, we've got, you know, a 7-footer versus a man with acromegaly. What do you got here? This is, I mean, if these two guys weren't actually skilled, this would be the definition of a freak show fight.
Struve has not looked the same since he came back from his heart ailment. He's missing something. Something is gone. And, you know, Struve was never, you know, he never made it to the contender level, but he was a pretty good, solid heavyweight fighter. He had his flaws, you know, especially with his defense, but I mean, he had some inspiring performances. Like, look at that fight against Stipe Miocic. He weathered the storm against Stipe and ended up beating him and finishing him. And he, you know, he's had some great fights and performances, but he's lacking something lately. He doesn't look sharp anymore. You know, he's never really had great defense throughout his career, and you couple that with just generally how sluggish and sloppy he's looked as of late, I'm not expecting great things for him there. Now, not that I think Bigfoot is all that, but I mean, even though Bigfoot has never had a great chin either, he still hits like a freight train. And I feel like with Struve's sloppiness in his defense and just the way he hasn't been performing great lately, I feel that's a recipe for disaster. Struve loses and gets knocked out. Calling it.
Alrighty.
You know how good I am at calling these things, Robert, and making it look bad.
It's true. You and I have pretty good records. Considering how often we pick against each other, it's kind of ironic, but that's the way it is. This is actually the fight I am most looking forward to on this card is up next. A welterweight fight between Albert Tumanov and Gunnar Nelson. I really like this fight. I've been a big fan of Albert Tumanov for a while. I've been preaching about how good he is since he, you know, lost that bad decision to Ildemar Alcantara. He's rebounded from that. He's on a 5-fight winning streak. Let's see, three of those.
Knocked out Joe Bann in a fantastic performance at UFC 192. Beating good guys.
That win over Lorenz Larkin, I mean, I know it was officially a split decision. I didn't think it was
that close.
He
decisively won that fight.
Yeah, and Gunnar Nelson, a bit of the shines off of that apple in a few ways. He's coming off of a loss to Damian Maia. Now, on the one hand, he tried to grapple. Damian Maia made him grapple with him. And, I mean, look, Gunnar Nelson is a legitimate, decorated in international competition black belt. He's won major titles. He's won major championships. He's performed very well in grappling competitions, and he got schooled by Damian Maia. Damian Maya's grappling is, I mean, it's otherworldly. You can't hold that too much against him. He beat Brandon Thatch before that. Then before that, he lost a split decision to Rick Story. It was not a bad fight, actually, but I had that for Story as well, if memory serves. And, I mean, this is the biggest, it is a big step up in competition for Tumanov, and if Gunnar Nelson can get him to the mat, Nelson will enjoy a substantial advantage. I'm going to pick Tumanov here, though. There's two reasons. One, I've been talking about how good the guy is for a long time. I've got to kind of stand by that. Two, a little bit of, you know, some of Nelson's recent performances haven't been great. Now, some of that is just the level of competition he's moved up to face, and, you know, that's to be expected. You're not going to blow through everybody. You're just the number of people who have just blown through all of their opposition, regardless of level of competition, is really small. And no disrespect to Gunnar Nelson, but he's not at that level. I think Tumanov's going to be able to do a good enough job keeping his back off the fence and avoiding takedowns. And Gunnar Nelson's striking style is heavily points karate influenced. He has a very wide stance, likes to kind of lunge in and out, kind of like Lyoto Machida, as an example. And I think he's with the way he stands, kind of the way he moves, I think he's going to struggle to kind of close the distance on Tumanov, and I think Tumanov is just going to kind of beat him up from the outside. I could be very wrong, and I acknowledge I'm going out on a limb here. I'm picking an underdog. I haven't seen the lines for some of the other fights, but I'm relatively sure Tumanov's an underdog. But I've talked about how good the man is for a while, and if Gunnar Nelson can't get him down, he's in for a long night, or a short night, as it might be. I got Tumanov, and I am more than prepared to be wrong about this one. Jeff, big fight here for the welterweights. Nelson gets to remain relevant, or Tumanov takes that step up as far as visibility goes that he's been looking for. What do you got?
I feel a little stupid because I was anointing Gunnar Nelson as like a future title contender you know, at one point, and I still think it's possible he could do that, but I feel like something is missing lately, and I think he's been a little lacking for development in his overall game. His grappling is world-class, but then he fought Damian Maia and got completely out-grappled. I mean, I figured Rick's story, that was a learning experience for him. It was a tough fight against a grinding wrestler, you know, and longtime veteran who has some good win. I mean, Story is a tough dude, and he's beaten Johnny Hendricks, he's beaten Thiago Alves, so, I mean, losing to a guy like Rick Story is not such a terrible loss on your record. But, I mean, and then he came back, and he submitted Brandon Sat, who's, you know, a big, strong welterweight. And then, okay, Damian Maia, middleweight contender. But now he's fighting a really young, budding prospect who's looked like a killer lately and has been doing great in the UFC. I mean, Chumanov is scary, man. He is freaking scary. He's a beast. And Nelson's looked... Here was my problem with his performance against Maia. He looked just a little too lackadaisical to me. He looked a little too relaxed. And if he does that against Chumanov, who beat up a great striker like Alan Jouban, it's going to be a bad night for Nelson. So just the way they've been performing lately, I'm going to go ahead and pick Chumanov. I think he is probably the liveliest underdog on this entire card. But I like that we're getting this fight, and I think we're either, you know, we're going to see two things. We're going to see the continued rise of Albert Chumanov, or we're going to see Gunnar Nelson, can he, you know, get motivated again and get back on, you know, sort of that path of greatness he was on when he first came into the UFC and everyone was singing his praises.
That's a fight a lot of people are sleeping on, and it's a darn good fight. All right, at women's bantamweight, Jermaine Durandamy is fighting Anna Elmos. I know nothing of Elmos at all. She's gotten a Wikipedia page, which means, you know, she's a female cab driver. I don't know, I'm not sure of the taxi situation in Rotterdam. Durandamy is a local. She was born in the Netherlands. You know, longtime veteran of...
Here's what I have on Anna Elmos. I'm sorry, Robert.
All right.
She's from Copenhagen, Denmark. 3-0 in her in her MMA career. This is her UFC debut. She hasn't... let me see. It looks like she's fought in Cage Warriors. So that's pretty much about it for her. So, and... Jermaine Durandamy is she's 5-3, and I mean she's, you know, sort of a mid-level UFC. I mean, fought in UFC and Strikeforce, so Elmos is making her octagon debut.
Yeah, this is a pretty big jump for Elmos. Durandamy is a former world champion, WIKBA world champion 3 different times. She's got a very, very decorated kickboxing and Muay Thai record. She's 5-3 in MMA. Her losses are to Julia Budd and Amanda Nunes recently, and Vanessa Porto in her debut. I also thought she lost that Julie Kedzie fight, but what do I know? I'm just a guy with a podcast. She's coming off of a win over Larissa Pacheco about a year ago. A little over a year ago, actually. If you want to pick on a newcomer who might be able to make a big splash, you could do worse than Elmos. I've got Durandamy here, though. I have a very hard time picking newcomers like that in positions like this. And I've been wrong about that in the past, but that's my position, generally speaking, and I'm sticking to it at the moment. Jeff, what do you got for this one?
I have Jermaine to win this. I mean, Anna could come out and have an impressive debut and surprise us, but I'm not really betting on that. So, Jermaine, how do I say it?
I don't know.
Rondame?
I've heard it pronounced a couple of different ways.
Jermaine de Rondame, so I'm going with her.
Alrighty, next up we've got a light heavyweight fight, because two heavyweights wasn't enough. Nikita Krylov is taking on Francimar Barroso. This is a pretty good fight.
Robert, so be quiet.
I'm just knocking the division in general. No, Krylov's a surprisingly resilient fighter in the UFC. He lost his debut to Soa Pelele. He gassed, as heavyweights do. He wasn't heavyweight against Soa Pelele.
He's performed well at light heavyweight. He's won his last three. He's finished all of them.
Yep.
Lower level opponents, but I mean, he's clearly more suited to light heavyweight, and he's been doing well.
Despite having a TKO win over Walt Harris at heavyweight, head kick and punches. He lost his debut to Ovin St. Preux, but Ovin St. Preux's pretty good. And yeah, three in a row since then, all finishes. The guy's kind of coming into his own, you know, he's not someone you talk about a lot when you think about the division, or even, you know, potential, should probably be in that discussion a little bit more.
He's a good workman fighter for the UFC.
Barroso's on a 2-fight winning streak, unanimous decisions over Ryan Jimmo and Elvis Mutapchich. I think it's Mutapchich. This is a tough one. Barroso is not someone you want to overlook. I'm actually going to lean towards Krylov in this. I reserve the right to change my opinion on this one. I'm going to have to watch a little tape on both guys before I make my official picks. Right now I'm leaning towards Krylov. He's on a slightly larger win streak. He's fought, you know, some better talent than Barroso has to this point. So I'm going to lean towards Krylov and, again, reserve the right to change my mind later. Jeff, you're big on Krylov. You picking him to win here?
I'm picking Krylov. He's more dangerous. All of Barroso's UFC wins are by decision. And let me see what else. All of his UFC fights have gone in decision. I just think Krylov is way more dangerous, more well-rounded, and I think he's going to beat Barroso here.
All right. And kicking off the main card at women's strawweight, we have Karolina Kovačević taking on Heather Jo Clark. Kovačević is undefeated on an 8-fight, undefeated, 8-0. Won her UFC debut against Randa Markos via unanimous decision. I thought she won that fight. There was a funky scorecard in that fight that was... I recall giving it to Kovačević, but I thought Markos had at least one round that she won without too much controversy, and there was a 30-27 or something in that. There was a weird score in that fight, as I recall. Heather Jo Clark is 7-4. She is undefeated in the UFC. She defeated Beck Rawlings at the finale of Tough 20. Jeez, December of 14. That was her last appearance. What has she been out for? No word here. I imagine injury related, though, because when you're out for that long, it's been, you know, well over a year. We're, you know, 17 months. You know, closer to 18, really. Jeez. That's a long time to be out. So I'm going with Kovačević. She's in a slightly better place right now, I think. Her striking is very good. Between ring rust and maybe just Heather Jo Clark being kind of a middling fighter in general, I got Karolina here. Jeff, what do you think?
I agree. Nothing I'm really seeing from Heather Jo Clark. I mean, she did beat Beck Rawlings. That is a solid win, but Kovačević has been more consistent lately, and she's been fighting lately, and Ronda Marcos is a good win, and I'm picking her. So, Carolina.
Alrighty. Kicking off then on the prelims. The first four of these are on Fox Sports 1, the other three on Fight Pass. Another fight I'm really looking forward to here, actually. Rustam Khabibov is taking on Chris Wade. That will main event the prelims. This was supposed to be Wade and Rashid Magomedov. Magomedov got injured, so now he gets Khabibov. These are two very good grapplers. This is gonna be a fun one. This is again another one, a good choice to main event the prelims to people who kind of follow this. I'm leaning towards Khabibov, but he's had a bit of a rough go of it lately, and it's entirely possible he's just, you know, he just broke a 2-fight losing streak. He might just, you know, be struggling a bit at this point in time, but I'm leaning towards him. At middleweight, Magnus Seddenblad will fight Gareth McClellan. This is it's middleweight. It's, and I say that as a way of referencing that the division is pretty healthy right now. These are unranked guys trying to make their way up in the world. I'm leaning towards Seddenblad. Let me see what he's done recently. He's a young guy, too. Yeah, he's on a 3-fight winning streak. I'll go with Seddenblad over McClellan, but McClellan winning wouldn't shock me. This might be one of those times when a younger guy just kind of gets overpowered in a, you know, gritty, kind of in-your-face, close-quarters brawl. So, not completely confident, but leaning that way. Lightweight, Nick Hein will fight John Tuck. This is not a bad fight. Hines, 3-1 in the UFC, lost to James Vick, but he's on a 2-fight winning streak. Tuck is, I want to say he's like the first guy from Guam to compete in the UFC. He won his last one. He submitted Taehyun Bang, lost to Kevin Lee. He's been, you know, back and forth a little bit. That's a tough one. I'll lean towards Tuck, but not confident at all. Also at lightweight, Jan Cabral will fight Reza Madadi. Go with Cabral because I don't think too much of Madadi's fighting ability. On Fight Pass, we have a really good fight main eventing the Fight Pass prelims. Kyoji Horiguchi is fighting Neil Seary. Neil Seary defeated John De Los Reyes his last time out. That was a really good fight. Got a submission in the second round. Those two went at it. He lost to Smolka before that, but Smolka was pretty darn good. Horiguchi, of course, fought for the title. Was defeated by Demetrius Johnson, but then so was everyone at flyweight. He had a really good record before that. His overall UFC record is 1, 2, 3, 4. He's 5-1 in the UFC. Neil Seary is kind of an old school fighter. You know, likes to box. That's one of his backgrounds. And Horiguchi, a little bit more wild, a little bit more explosive. I got Horiguchi here, but that's a really good fight. If they're trying to sell you on Fight Pass, that's a good fight. At welterweight, Leon Edwards, is taking on Dominic Waters. Edwards is a late notice replacement. This was supposed to be Peter Sabata, but Sabata got injured. Edwards coming off of a loss to Kamaru Usman. I'll go with Waters. Not confident about that. And kicking everything off also at flyweight, Yuta Sasaki faces Willie Gates. Sasaki signed on to this fight on the 25th of April. Bit of a late notice. This was supposed to be Gates and Paddy Houlihan, but as talked about a little bit earlier, Paddy Houlihan had to retire. He has apparently clotting factor 13 deficiency. I know a little bit about that because I donate plasma on a weekly basis, and that's one of the things that it's used to treat. It's a very rare blood disorder. It's not full-blown hemophilia, but there's some similar issues there. Again, rare, it's something like 1 in every 5 million people that this actually affects. It's a very recessive trait in the genetics, so sucks to see Paddy Houlihan go. The guy was always fun to watch, always showed up on time, had good fights. But if he's got issue, you know, a blood disorder like that, you shouldn't be fighting. Best of luck to him in, you know, whatever comes next. Sasaki is on a 2-fight losing streak. Jeez. That's a rough one. That is a rough one, especially against Willie Gates. Gates lost to Dustin Ortiz, but he's 1-2 in the UFC, but he was really in that John Moraga fight, and he didn't get blown out by – he didn't get completely blown out by Dustin Ortiz. I'm going to go with Gates there. Wouldn't be shocked if Sasaki wins, but I'm going with Gates. All right. Jeff, that is a really, again, I mentioned, that's a pretty solid group of prelims. There's a few really good fights there. What are you looking forward to? What are your burning desires?
Khabib versus Chris Wade is awesome. Kyoji Horiguchi versus Neil Siri, that's a really good flyweight fight with two really strong, entertaining flyweights. Hey, Horiguchi got beat by Demetrius Johnson. I mean, that's... And he still got one of the better records at flyweight. And Neil Siri is always a tough, entertaining flyweight. Chris Wade has been performing very well. This is a really good test and step up in competition for him. Khabib, he had a couple losses, but he's back on the winning track now. So this is a very good fight. It's very symbolic of how tough and competitive lightweight is. Excuse me. So I love that fight. There are a few guys I'm really looking forward to here on the prelims.
All right, that will go live. Oh, first prelim goes live 8:30 my time, so that's 7:30 Pacific, 10:30 a.m. Eastern, Sunday morning. So I'll have live coverage in the MMA Zone of 411 Mania. Stop by, say hello. Appreciate it.
Get your Red Bull, get your 5-hour energies, get your coffee. It's gonna be an early morning of fights.
And then in the evening, because that will end worst case scenario, if every fight goes the distance, it's still gonna end well before the show that will come to you next week. Next week, after coverage at our usual time of 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we'll be here. Jeff and I will review UFC Fight Night 87. And let me see. And we will be previewing UFC 198.
May not feature a UFC heavyweight title fight.
At the moment, the main event is Fabricio Werdum defending the title against Stipe Miocic.
At the moment, Robert, but as we all know, moments pass to the next moment.
Next
moment could be different from this moment.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid card. You got Werdum and Miocic, Ronaldo Jacare Souza and Vitor Belfort ought to be a heck of a fight. Anderson Silva and Uriah Hall will feature 15 minutes of circling. I know there's a lot of people.
199 is what I'm really looking forward to more than anything.
199
maybe
is pretty
more
stacked.
Than
199 is pretty stacked. But anyway, next week we'll be previewing 198 after reviewing Fight Night 87. All right, Jeff, what's in the news? What do we got to talk about today
here? UFC 200 has a new prospective main event. It will be the rescheduled rematch for the light heavyweight title between the current champion, who is Daniel Cormier, versus the former and current interim champion, John Jones, at that card in Las Vegas. So that's what we have now. Apparently, Daniel Cormier has been cleared to take that fight in July. John Jones has agreed to that fight. So, just coming off a 25-minute affair with Ovince St. Preux, which he still won. So that's the fight right now. And I got to be honest, I like that main event. And if that main event stays intact, to me, this is a better card and a more meaningful card than Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz. I understand that, Conor's a box office draw, and, he's the biggest name in the sport right now. But you know, this is a fight we need to see. And we didn't get it at UFC 197. Hopefully we'll get it here. Hopefully. Because there's still a lot of time between now and UFC 200. So hopefully this fight happens and John Jones will win the belt and we'll go from there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Hopefully that holds up. There's three title fights on that card. The UFC could be pushing their luck there a little bit. I mean, Nunez and Tate is unlikely to go five, but it will. I feel confident it will go three.
I could definitely see that one going five. And of course, Jones versus Cormier went five the first time. So,
and Edgar and Aldo. I mean, Aldo's, you know, got a few more miles on him, and Edgar's looked good, but
look,
they went the distance last time too.
Look, it is UFC 200. You got to go big for an event like this. Even though this isn't the real UFC 200, this is really like UFC 198, but since they never brought back 151 and 176, but this is a big summer event for the UFC. You got to go big for this. So, no, this might not pay off, but we'll see. I could easily see all three title fights going all five rounds, and that would really kill pacing. But you know, it'll be a big affair. Fight week is going to be sick. So
I'll just say I hope the UFC's on good terms with the pay per view provider, so that if all three do go the distance, we're not going to get cut off.
Yeah,
I think that's a
usually
concern.
Usually get half an hour. But I think this means they're going to have to cut out some of the entrances and some of the videos. They're just going to have to like snap it up, you know?
Yeah, because I'm going to be honest, if the feed cuts out into the main event, I won't be a happy camper,
but,
and neither
will
a lot of other people.
What is Robert Winfrey going to do if all those, you know, if all those fights go to decision, how is he gonna not have a conniption fit?
Yeah, I won't have a conniption fit, but I will say this: if the pay-per-view feed cuts out, I might have to resort to quasi-nefarious means.
But look, just in terms of talent, I mean, look, we have Jose Aldo versus Frankie Edgar. We have Cain Velasquez versus Travis Brown, and then you know down the card we have Gegard Mousasi, we have Joe Lozon, Sage Northcutt fighting again, and we have Kat Zingano versus Juliana Pena. So, but I mean, we have some less relevant names, but you know, still some you know talented veterans like Gomi versus Miller. So this is the card is shaped up quite well, but again, a lot of time still between now and July, so we'll see.
And we as MMA fans have all come to know and understand that the little disclaimer they have on all of these cards subject to change is a very real thing. All right. Was that it, Jeff? Is there any other major news that came out this week?
Well, there still is this still ongoing business between Conor and the UFC. Both sides are kind of really, they're committed to their, They're committed to their side, just like in Marvel Civil War. You know, they're just kind of Conor McGregor. He was on Instagram.
Captain Ireland against bald man Dana White.
Exactly. So Conor was on Instagram. He said, "Cut the shit, UFC. Let's run it back." Go figure. Nate Diaz, he's saying he doesn't want to. He'll only fight Conor McGregor at UFC 200. So
good for him. So,
yeah. So that's sort of the state of things, right there. I kind of feel like Conor McGregor is just not going to fight on this card. And I think he has to figure out what he's going to do about the flyweight title. and I think he's going to have to let this fight with Diaz go. It doesn't. It never made sense in the first place. It didn't make sense at UFC 196. It doesn't make sense here. He's got to decide, do I want to be a lightweight? Do I want to be the flyweight champion and just go from there? Because, look, there's absolutely no reason Edgar versus Aldo should be for the interim title. No reason. But this is what we have right now. So I think the situation will be resolved, but it'll have to be for a different fight.
Yeah, as long as Jones and Cormier stays together, I really don't think McGregor's got enough leverage to get onto UFC 200.
I mean, so maybe it's not going to do like 1.5 million buys, but it'll do, with this card, they'll do good business with this card, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, as long as this breaks a million, I think the UFC and fans should be happy. I mean, with Conor, this thing was a near sure thing to break UFC 100's buy rate record, which stands at 1.6 million. Without him, if they do less than 100, if they do less than a million buys, I'd consider that a bit of a disappointment as far as, you know, financial performance.
Oh, another fight for International Fight Week that just got announced. Derek Lewis will fight Roy Nelson at UFC Fight Night 90. That's the all fight pass card with Dos Anjos versus Eddie Alvarez. So another great
heavyweight. Those two guys are going to hit each other in the face until one of them falls over. Money's on Derek Lewis falling over first.
Or runs out of cardio.
Yeah, then he'll fall over. I mean, if you gas against Roy Nelson, that's a bad spot to be, because then your technique's gone and then he can just kind of hit you in the head and you're going to fall over. I do like that fight, though. You know, it's a really kind of fun brawl that should exist to kind of keep the fans happy.
I don't know if you know this, but Dana White did say after UFC 197 that he agrees with Joe Rogan that Demetrius Johnson is pound for pound in the world. So,
yeah, he'll change his mind tomorrow when he changes his shirt.
Now, look, I think people, I got to be honest, I've never been a fan of the whole pound for pound listings and dynamic. And I don't know what people, I think, take it way too seriously. I on one hand, I understand, but on the other hand, I don't. Like, why? What pound for pound truly means is, like, who would be, like, who would be the best at, like, any weight, basically? Isn't that essentially what it means?
Fundamentally, yeah. And that's one of the points of contention about the pound for pound argument is what exactly are the criteria.
So I feel like, and now people are saying, well, Demetrius Johnson has to fight Dominic Cruz again. And I got to be honest, as better as Johnson has gotten, I just feel the way they match up stylistically, I still feel Cruz wins that fight. I don't want to say not 10 times out of 10, but like 9 times out of 10, I still think he wins that fight. And the reason I say that is just because of how that fight went the first time. And this is not like the way people say Anderson Silva beats Chris Weidman 9 times out of 10, because they fought 2 out of 2 times and Weidman won both of those times. So I just think I understand the temptation to want to make super fights for Johnson, but I think it makes more sense for him to just stay at flyweight for now and let him try and break the record of Anderson Silva, and then, okay, then maybe if he does that, then maybe talk about him doing super fights.
You know, and at this point, I think Demetrius Johnson could kind of call his own shot there. If he really wanted another shot at the bantamweight belt, they'd probably give it to him. I think he wants to break Anderson Silva's record. I think that's his primary goal right now. And fighting up at bantamweight against Dominic Cruz, and I mean, again, I pick DJ over pretty much every bantamweight except Cruz. But if he's if he'd rather break Silva's consecutive title defenses, maybe get a chance at the overall winning streak record, I think that's where his head is right now. And whatever he wants to do is fine with me, man. Demetrius Johnson's awesome.
Okay. And I guess last bit of news, Travis Brown, who's fighting Cain Velasquez at UFC 200, he did this media luncheon for the event. He got really upset. He was pretty much almost in tears. And he said the media betrayed him when he was going through his domestic abuse allegations and that whole and when that whole thing was playing out in the public. So what do you make of that, Robert? Was it right for him to say he was betrayed by the media?
Yeah, he's right to have whatever his feelings are. I think he's inaccurate in saying that he was betrayed, the news media reports. Now, my understanding is a lot of those charges...
He said they didn't... They only gave one side of it, and they weren't accurate.
Yeah, maybe they were. You know, they can only do what they can do to get business up. And at the moment, you know, domestic violence is a pretty big hot button, and Travis Brown is a large man. Was he treated a bit unfairly in terms of objectively? Yeah, maybe. But, you know, I don't know. It's
here, let me read you one of the things he wrote. I'm a 6'7", 250-pound man. I have two little boys at home. And if I did the things I was accused of, you want those two boys being raised by me? Why wouldn't you want them out of my home? Why would you want me to have my career if that's the kind of man that I am? So, yeah, honestly, I feel a little betrayed. So, this is just a theory. By no means take this as a fact. My theory is that, you know, he's married to this woman, Jenna Renee Webb. And then he's starting a relationship with Ronda Rousey. She probably, you know, whatever's going on with their marriage, she probably finds out about it, and there was probably some emotional explosion. What happened there, I don't really know. But I think just looking, I can kind of see where Brown's coming from his perspective, but, you know, the media didn't betray him. The media is not, you know,
they're not loyal
like,
to him to begin with.
Right.
Betrayal implies
like,
loyalty.
Yeah, there's no, like, the media doesn't owe Brown anything. The media is not in a friendship with Brown and obligated to tell only his side and only take his side. So the media, there was no, you know, the MMA media does make mistakes, but this was not, I think, one of those situations. And I feel like all of those details were out there because I definitely saw red flags from Webb. Not that I believe Brown is innocent. I mean, ultimately, we've never – I don't really feel like we've seen enough evidence to really convince me one way or the other. Now, there were some red flags in Webb's story, I believe, but that doesn't mean she was lying either. That doesn't mean what she was saying was false. If she is a victim, maybe that caused her to act irrationally. Who knows? But to me, there was no betrayal here, and I think I can understand why Brown was upset. But I don't know. I think for him to say like, you know, we're betraying him, I think is kind of it's silly. It's not to me that's nonsense. Like, it's not the media's job to be on his side in. Only take his side on this issue.
Yeah, again, betrayal implies loyalty on some level, and the news media is not obligated or loyal to him in any way, shape, form, or fashion. If they are, they're not doing their job right. All right, Jeff, you saw and enjoyed Keanu, apparently.
Did you see Keanu?
No, I won't like it. I know my comedic sensibilities and Key
right.
and Peele
well,
are
I
generally
would say
opposite.
It's good. I would say it's good, and the reason I liked it is because the humor in comedy was, like, situational and character-based. unlike most of what Sacha Baron Cohen's doing lately. So on that level, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed listening to you and Mark's review of Snow White, Huntsman Winter's War, the sequel to Snow White and the Huntsman, and what you guys and how you guys broke that down. You know, not that I hated the movie, but I honestly agree with you. There was no reason for that sequel to get made. So there you go. And tomorrow I am off to see Civil War. Even though the movie's already been released overseas in many international territories and it's coming out in the U.S. last, I will be seeing it early for the North American crowd tomorrow, and I will be having a review up for the site. So it is Marvel Week, and no one's going to want to miss that. So I'm very excited for this film. Very excited.
All right, looking forward to your review of that one. And I'll see you next week.
And check my column about Anthony Pettis. About
that was
what's
a pretty good one.
I
liked what you said there.
Yeah. So Anthony Pettis, what's going on with him? Can he get back on the comeback trail? Check that out in the MMA Zone. So thanks, and looking forward to next week, Mark.
All right, see you then, Jeff.
Mark Robert.
Sorry. I had a bit
of a Freudian slip there. I'm sorry, Robert.
Don't worry about it. I called Mark Larry on his last day hosting this thing.
Larry. Great. Thank you.
See you next week, Jeff.
Yep.
As for me, as Jeff alluded to, Mark Radlich and I reviewed The Huntsman Winter's War. That is up in the archives of the Radlich and Broadcasting Network, so give it a listen if you're interested. No movie review this week, but next Wednesday, Mark and I will be reviewing Captain America Civil War, Avengers 2.5. Really looking forward to that one. As Jeff said, you can read his review. And I'll have live coverage in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com of UFC 80, Fight Night 87 this coming Sunday morning. I hope you'll all stop by and say hello. Until then, that's everything we've got here. We're all done. We're buttoned up. I'll see you next week, same time, same channel, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Sunday evening, when Jeff and I will again review UFC Fight Night 87 and preview UFC 198. Heavyweight title fight. Ought to be a good one. All right, until next time, everyone, please remember to be well, be safe, and behave.